Okay, so Saturday night of the this last week of the retreat, and yeah, we've been having a full schedule of meditation practice, and I don't know about anybody else, but I've been enjoying it. Although it doesn't actually sort of move my mind towards talking very much. But here it is, Saturday night. Yeah, we've got to do something. But what did come to mind is that of course, we've been exploring this whole 3 months, exploring the four foundations of mindfulness, so four satipatthana. And the very last aspect of the dhammanupassana satipatthana, the foundation of mindfulness based on categories of dhamma or experience of phenomena, is the Four Noble Truths. And that's a it is a on it's kind of like that's where everything comes together, ties everything together. Because the teaching that the Buddha gave, in the teachings that the Buddha gave over this kind of the vast compilation of the Tripitaka, the scripture, the Buddha emphasizes over and over and over again, just say basically, I teach only two things: suffering, ending of suffering, dukkha, ending of dukkha. Or in the when he introduces the teaching to somebody who has faith, he would give a preparatory talk covering generosity, virtue, renunciation, various aspects of experience, and then when the person's mind was ripe, was ready, would speak on the Four Noble Truths, and described as the teaching that was unique to the fully awakened ones. So it's not a small thing. And certainly Ajahn Chah, he would. Many great teachers, but Ajahn Chah in particular, who I'm most familiar with, but always be coming back to these Four Noble Truths as a important aspect of Dhamma to be reflecting on, investigating, really trying to put one's mind in a space of how do I understand this? Because one of the things is, looking at the world through the lens of experience rather than through the lens of personality, personalizing things. Me and my problems, me and my difficulties, me and my special abilities, me and my special specialness. And the Buddha said, no, dukkha, cause of dukkha, cessation of dukkha, path leading to the ending of dukkha. So just the sense of seeing things in a very different light, and to be able to encourage ourselves to keep returning to that as a, and the Buddha actually just go, and of course we chant that in the chant of the Noble Eightfold Path, that when what is right view? Right view is knowledge of dukkha, knowledge of the origin of dukkha, knowledge of the cessation of dukkha, knowledge of the path leading to cessation of dukkha. That is right view. And in one particular sutta, the Buddha two aspects to right view, and right view on a mundane level is more around the nature of causality, and right view on the transcendent level, on a super mundane level, is Four Noble Truths. It's important to not underestimate how central this is to our ability to experience the fruits of this practice, being able to adjust our view. So it's kind of like, you know, if you're going to go into a building or a house, you go in through the door. If you're going to go into the essence of the Dhamma, you go in through the Four Noble Truths. This is so important to be reflecting on it. And this is, Jack Kornfield tells the story of his first meeting with Ajahn Chah. And yeah, he'd only just met Ajahn Chah and wanted to come and stay and study and practice at Wat Bopong with Ajahn Chah, and Ajahn Chah's kind of response, "I hope you're not afraid to suffer." And Jack was a bit taken aback and a bit aghast, and said, "What do you mean?" And he said, and Ajahn Chah explained, "Well, there's two kinds of suffering. One is the kind that we run away from." And we don't look at, we don't investigate, but because of that, it just keeps following us. And the other kind of suffering is the suffering that we are willing to face and learn from and understand and be free from. So that willingness to point directly to that was one of Ajahn Chah's. It was one of the great gifts that he gave us, and why he's considered such a great teacher. He was never afraid to point out how the different ways that we create suffering for ourselves. So this willingness to look carefully, and of course, like, it's the structure of the Four Noble Truths is because there is a tendency to shrink back from, who wants to look at suffering? Who wants to look at one's dissatisfaction, one's discontent? I just want to be happy. And I want to be satisfied. I want to be gratified. But how the Buddha structures it is based on the Ayurvedic medicine, so that it's as if a doctor is looking at your condition. You go to a doctor. Yes, of course, you want to be happy. You want to be peace. You want to be healthy. I want to be healthy. But usually what gets you to a doctor is some illness or something that is and that's dukkha. And it's the illness of the human condition is just this constant discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease that we experience. And that's, as I say, there is the symptoms. And then, okay, well, what are the causes of the symptoms? And of course, then the Buddha says the cause of dukkha is craving in different ways. And tanha is a word. And tanha is like, literally it means thirst. So that thirst, the craving, the hunger for something. Give me anything. But it's also not just looking externally, it's the craving for being, becoming, and propping up the sense of self, the craving for non-being, don't like it, don't want it, shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't be this way. The world shouldn't be this way. You certainly shouldn't be the way you are. So it's that constant kind of movement of the mind, and then of course then looking at that, okay, there's the symptoms, the disease, and there's the cause of that. Is there a cure? And so is there an end to this? And then the Buddha, yes, there is, and there is a path, there is a way to do this. And so it's, and in the same way, is there a cure for this illness, this malady, and how do you treat yourself? How do you look after it? How do you get better? So that these Four Noble Truths are cast in the light of the Ayurvedic doctor's approach, and some in the suttas there are places where the Buddha says, I mean sometimes he calls himself a teacher, but sometimes he does call himself a doctor for the world. He's providing relief for the world. So to be looking at things in that light. But it does take this reflection and investigation to encourage ourselves or to see clearly. Because so often, we get caught up in our own biases, we get caught up in the biases of the world, we get caught up in our habits and the habitual tendencies of the world around us. It takes a discernment, a real reflection. It's one of the qualities that the Buddha points to as really necessary or integral to really freeing the heart is this yoniso manasikara, wise reflection, careful consideration, considered attention. It's this real carefulness. It's also seeding the mind in the right way. It's one of the things that, say, from the Tibetan teachings that I've always appreciated is the four thoughts that turn the mind to the Dhamma. And it's a really skillful tool and quite simple. And the first one is the faults, the drawback, the flaws, limitations of samsara. Samsara is not, samsara in terms of the world and the world of dissatisfaction, the world of discontent. But it's also the nature of our mind. The samsara as a word. Normally it's considered the world of that we keep being reborn into. But even if we don't think in terms of multiple lifetimes, we are being reborn into worlds from moment to moment. The literal meaning of the word samsara is wandering on. And of course, that's the nature of our mind. It's wandering on, moving. Like in how the Buddha describes the cause of dukkha, is craving, ever seeking fresh delight, now here, now there. Tatra, tatra, binandini. And you sit down to watch your breath. You think, okay, I don't. We're in the last week of retreat. I'll just sit down, watch my breath, get my mind peaceful. There's no no place to go, nothing to do other than meditate and practice. And how long does that resolve last? It's wandering on to the next thing. You know, whether it's exalted or whether it's demented or whether it's negative. It's just, you know, give me something to do other than sit here and be peaceful and let the mind still. So it's just to be able to see that clearly and recognize it and seeing, yeah, the samsara is flawed. There are limitations to it. And when we see it and reflect in that way, it turns the mind to Dhamma. The mind is uplifted by stillness and peace. It's inclined to peace. It's inclined to renunciation. It's inclined to relinquishment and seeing the drawbacks of things. Another of the thoughts that turn the mind to Dhamma is the nature of karma. The whole sort of causal process, causes, results, and it is a orderly process that gets disorderly very quickly. Things just keep happening, keep bouncing. The causes that we put into the mind. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, sometimes they're neutral. But then it's the nature of life we reap the fruits of our karma. So that being very, very patient, because it's one of the things that the Buddha said. You know, it's just like an ordinary person, or even extraordinary person, can't really see the extent of karma. Even a fully awakened being without the powers of a Buddha can't really comprehend the extensiveness of this causal process. So one has to be extremely patient with it. And you can't just sort of, often we sit, we get inspired by the Buddha, or we get inspired by the great masters sitting in meditation, and we want to be like them. It's a very beautiful motivation, a very beautiful intention, but we can sometimes frustrate ourselves by idealizing what we think we should do, or what we think we should be, or what we think we should be getting out of the practice. And there's this way, the Ajahn Chah, can you just be content to be an earthworm? And just do earthworm practice. Just get your head down and just keep going. Earthworms don't know where they're going, but they just keep going, and they do a great job. Keeping the earth really healthy, this quality of patience, and certainly that for as clear as we can see, we still need to be patient with the intricacies of the karmic processes, because it's so elaborate, extensive. One can understand the principle in the sense that for whatever cause one puts in, it would be some sort of result. That's fairly straightforward, but it's hard to predict. And it's like even the Buddha says, the karma can ripens either in this present lifetime or in the next lifetime, or in some future lifetime. So it's very, very indeterminate. This pretty broad scope. But to be reflecting the nature of karma. Another thought that turns the mind to Dhamma is impermanence and death. The sense of impermanence, inconstancy, uncertainty, change, and that especially in terms of our life, culminates in death. This is an inevitable. There isn't anything that was ever born that will not die. It's just not the nature of things. And that doesn't mean that it's everything is hopeless and completely empty, completely void of meaning, because everything ends. It's just the nature of things. But it can be known. It can be seen clearly. It can be seen through the lens of, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. And when it's seen with knowledge and true vision, one can be free. The liberation is of the heart is possible when we're, again, where we're willing to learn from that, willing to face it and learn from it. In the same way that Ajahn Chah says, yeah, there's these different kinds of dukkha. The ones that we keep running away from and avoiding or trying to disregard. But it keeps following us. And impermanence and death, they keep following us. And, you know, we have to turn our attention to that reality in order to not be shaken. And certainly that, you know, one of the qualities that always inspired me and impressed me with thinking of Ajahn Chah, of what quality was stood out the most, was just his unshakability, was unshaken by anything. And it didn't mean he didn't feel anything or didn't see anything or didn't engage with any, but he was unmoved and unshaken. The world could completely fall apart and he would be completely at peace with that and completely unmoved by that. And that's something that we all can experience. So it's just that contemplative, the lifting up these thoughts that turn the mind to Dhamma. And the last thought that turns the mind to Dhamma is the recollection of this precious human rebirth. We have this opportunity to be born in with a body and a mind that are somewhat functional, and we can use it skillfully. We can use it wisely, and in particular we can use it compassionately. And so that part of to respond wisely to the nature of dukkha and the circumstance of the human condition, and to be able to feel the immensity of that, and to respond with wisdom and compassion. This is a precious quality of this opportunity of having taken birth, and to be able to facilitate that, to support that, and the word compassion, say in English, literally means to on a certain level, it means to suffer with. Calm is from its Latin root. Calm is to with, and passion is from pati, to suffer. But it's all, you know, to feel with, to actually feel with, to have empathy with, not just to make yourself miserable and to suffer, but it's more to be able to feel with and to to respond with a sense of, you know, what I feel, others feel, and this is this human condition. We're in this together. What can I do to look after myself? What can I do to help look after others? And it's just being able to you know, that aspect of, you know, contemplation of, say, of dukkha, contemplation of these Four Noble Truths, is to allow us to feel and respond, you know, with wisdom and compassion. Because sometimes we, you know, it's easy to, especially in our, in this kind of more modern age of things being objectified, conceptualized, taken on as an idea, and sometimes we skip over the feeling bit and responding appropriately, responding compassionately. You know, it's like you, because even if we feel something like, oh, I've got this sore on my forehead, and you go look in the mirror and say, oh, there's a sore on my forehead. And you get some, go and get some medicine, go put it on the mirror. And it's just like thinking about it. You have to respond, learning how to bring it back in. And this, the nature of Dhamma is this open Aiko Dhamma, leading it inwards, drawing it inwards, so that we're able to respond with appropriate to the circumstance and the situation. So that this using the tools of this Four Noble Truths to contemplate, investigate, and to prepare the mind to respond with wisdom and compassion, because the mind can whinge about it. I mean, it's I don't want to think about it too much. It makes me uncomfortable. But it's really helpful. How do we work with things? How do we deal with things? How do we feel things and respond appropriately? So Ajahn Chah gave the image. So it's like just how important it is to contemplate dukkha and contemplate, you know, anicca dukkha anatta. You know, particularly dukkha. Contemplating dukkha, it's the mind resists or thinks, what, why bother? I'm okay now. I don't suffer that much. But it's like having a solid boat that you can take out in the water and you can paddle around, do this. Okay, we got, sort of, again, you know, somewhat functional body mind. It's going okay right now. Somebody says you should learn how to swim. You say, what's the point? I got this good boat. But then, you know, at some point it springs a leak, and, or, you know, some waves come up, and all of a sudden learning how to swim looks like a good idea. So this, you know, we should do it ahead of time, you know, rather than waiting for some sort of calamity to arise. So this contemplating these Four Noble Truths, investigating, so that it really does help us turn to the path leading out of suffering, so that we are able to really experience the ending of suffering. And it's in the knowing, it's in the seeing, it's in in that clear. And of course, this is why these four foundations of mindfulness are so important. This is that cultivation of an astuteness of awareness, where it's, of course, it starts, paying attention to more external things, but again, this open aiko, leading inwards, drawing inwards, bringing the attention inwards, and so that this knowing is knowing the mind itself, knowing the quality of the heart itself. As we do that, that in itself is the ending of suffering, because it's it's when that knowing and clarity of awareness is present, then it's not that we have to go around stamping out dukkha or doing a whole lot. It's just like having writing a line or with your finger on water. But it's that line is gone immediately. The impression is gone immediately. It's the same in the mind that is with awareness and knowing clearly. This is its true nature. This is the nature of all phenomena, and there's a release there. And it isn't that you make it release. It's in the same way that the water doesn't need to figure out how it's going to get back together again. It's just the mind is ready to be with this quality of clear seeing, clear knowing. Okay, so that's a plug for the Four Noble Truths. Offer that for reflection this evening.